I'm Greg Garrett. I live here in Providence. I do consulting around the ecology-economy interface. And after Piketty's book, it's pretty hard to argue that anything that increases inequality is actually good for communities. And clearly, a subsidy from the public to the very wealthiest of people has to be harmful to communities. Why would you try to sell us on this?
All I can tell you is we talked before about baseball being affordable family entertainment. And I know there was talk that, oh, what happens when you build a new ballpark and their prices that go up and such. We're actually talking about lowering some of the prices. We have a plan named in memory of Ben Mondor, whom I was fortunate enough to know too and loved, where we actually take the prices that currently are at the lowest at $9 and you take them down to $8. You want to do something that is for the families of all backgrounds, of all parts of Rhode Island, of all socioeconomic groups. It's so wonderful to me when baseball unifies a community and brings everybody together. I think you've seen that before, you know, with some of our other work. And so when you talk about how you mutually invest to make Rhode Island bigger, there's a way to do that well. There's a way to make sure that you have baseball in Rhode Island where it does good and brings people from all backgrounds, because the joy is seeing that 8-year-old from that town and that 12-year-old from that town with dreams in their eyes. We have the draft going on right now. And you get so excited when somebody has made it. That's if you are a good player. For those of us who got 2 hits in 2 years of Little League, it was just enough to love the game. And I think the equality is actually what we strive for. We want everybody to enjoy this.
Let's go to a question over there. Fred Rickey from Cranston, Rhode Island. I love the dreams. The picture's beautiful. And I'll try to make this a question. It just seems preposterous we're having this discussion without the numbers.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of time for numbers, but I don't have those, and especially with it being started anew. But I think there is the first question. If you decide that you want something and you go to the store to buy it and you then see, well, do I want to pay this or do I want to pay that? You can get into that discussion so that you know what you're buying. But here's the first question. Do you see this as an idea that has merits for a way to have baseball as a catalyst for redevelopment in an area of land that that holds promise?
Yeah, hi. I'm Peter Van Erp. I live in Providence. The late Mr. Skeffington spoke quite a bit about his fondness for the Durham Bulls ballpark in Durham and all the economic development that happened around him. Now, Durham is a part of North Carolina, the Research Triangle, which has 3 major cities in them: Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill. Each has a major university. If the ballpark was actually generating economic development, Durham should be outpacing the 2 other cities. Is it?
Okay, so I can answer that. When economists, again, economists not so associated with teams or leagues, go back and actually look at cities that have either built new stadiums, had new teams that have relocated, when we look at when baseball disappears because of a strike or a lockout, when we actually go back and look at economic indicators, the economists who look at this, we can almost never find any economic impact associated with spectator sports. It's one of the reasons that economists are almost in complete agreement about, at least when you're talking about region-wide benefits from sports, we are almost in complete agreement that there's very little in terms of direct economic benefits region-wide from sports. And if you can get a bunch of economists to agree on something, that's actually fairly remarkable. Mind you, there are some clear examples of local neighborhood development, and those are clear and obvious. But when you're talking about using a ballpark for wider development outside a several block area. We generally don't see that when we're looking, again, across all stadiums, all sports, all years. We just simply don't see that.
Question over here.
Given that some of the public value that could be generated from a ballpark has also been seen in places that are green spaces that are well-programmed, like Millennium Park in Chicago and others, I'm wondering, from an urban planning perspective, what you can offer about what the city might lose if we lose this downtown green space that we couldn't regain someplace else in the city.
I think it's important for a mixed-use environment, for the kind of lifestyle, for the kind of residents, the kind of companies that the city wants to attract and retain to have park space and to have open space. I think that one of the questions that needs to be looked at is, if the stadium is built in this location, is there another location for the park? Is the park that goes with the stadium enough? I've seen the plans, the designs for the park and for the pedestrian bridge. I think it could be great, but there are lots of ways to do that. There's not just one way, and it is a really essential piece of a thriving downtown.
But let me follow up, and I don't like being the dour economist all the time, so let me be the pro-baseball guy for just a moment, in that the idea that parks can be an attractor to people that make communities vibrant, exciting things for people to do also make communities vibrant. And a famous quote by Hubert H. Humphrey, who the Metrodome was named after, where the Twins played for many years, he said, you know, without professional sports, Minneapolis is just a really cold Omaha. There's certainly some element here that Charles is saying that, look, having baseball in Providence is something that makes Providence a much more livable place. And, of course, having baseball in Pawtucket, just the same sort of thing, makes the greater Providence area a more livable space. The question is, how much are we willing to pay to get that? My sense is that, look, you in Rhode Island can pay anything you want, but be very focused on, you should be doing this because this is an amenity for the city, much less than this is something that's going to make everyone rich. Baseball does, we have some evidence that baseball makes us happy, but not as much that it makes the typical person rich.
You keep on saying that you want to have a discussion. Would you then support a public vote on this issue?
I also mentioned that I believe in representative government. Call me old-fashioned. But what you'd like to do is, you know, what are there, 39 cities and towns? We'd like to just have a discussion with people and go to it. But I think that there are those who devote their lives to learning these issues and representing us. And I'm again old-fashioned in my belief of representative government. But I do think that it should be something that is fully, not just fully vetted, but fully experienced by people. Because every concern that gets mentioned gets integrated into the discussion. When we were designing the ballpark in San Diego, we had sessions, we called them California Dreaming Sessions, and fans would say what they wanted to have, and they might say what they were concerned about. Well, that influenced the design. That made it a better ballpark. And so that's what I think is the fun part of participation.
My name is Melissa, and I'm a student here at Brown. My question is more on the urban planning perspective. Mr. Steinberg, you mentioned that like around 45% of attendees come from the South Coast of Massachusetts. I'm personally from the South Coast, and I know that there's no direct like transportation connection to this area, so it would be entirely dependent on car travel, and also the culture here in Rhode Island is very dependent on traveling by cars, which means that the majority of people that would be coming to the stadium would be in their vehicles. So my concern is particularly for the congestion that the stadium would cause in this area, especially when it's located right next to the center of RIPTA, which is very dependent on their schedules. So.
We see the train being a vital role for people outside of Rhode Island. It is now.
The train doesn't connect to South Coast, Massachusetts.
Well, I won't tell you that I'm going to tell you where everybody gets on. There are people who are coming down the Amtrak, whether you get on in Boston at South Station or Back Bay Station or at 128, and one of the things that Jim Skeffington, may rest in peace, had said was you can build a Taj Mahal and put it in Pawtucket, you still can't get there by train. And when you have, I believe there's a multimodal or intermodal station here, you'd want it to be that you diversify and not make it all dependent on cars. That's part of what makes it a win. What I would do is take from your suggestion the reminder that we do want to make sure there are alternate ways, multiple ways to get to a ballpark and get to a neighborhood safely during the day, get home at night. Some of the ways that you go to Fenway Park now, you couldn't do 2 years ago. It's a 103-year-old ballpark, and we've changed that now.
Transportation connections like Boston does. Boston has the Green Line. I personally lived by Fenway last year, so I know that a lot of people that got there, they got there through walking, they got there through the Green Line. Providence, people aren't very reliant on the RIPTA. People would be driving in from South Coast, Massachusetts. Everyone would be driving in, and that would cause about 90% of that consider a lot of people who would be coming in.
I don't know whether 5 years ago in Boston there was the vision that that you could supplement the Green Line with the commuter rail that comes in from the western suburbs, but you have that now. And it was there were 17 stops, and you had to flag the stop, and now it's 44 perhaps times that it now stops. There are visions of change that we can do, and I think that if living on the area you describe is one that merits that, then let's take a look at that. But let's not pretend that the trains that connect people in the Northeast Corridor of the United States aren't a wonderful source of transportation to come from elsewhere in New England. I know a lot of us who come down from Boston, it's just the most convenient way to come down. But let's expand that.
Peter McClure. I'm very concerned about the idea that this is an old salesman's trick. We're only talking about this one location with this one group of owners wanting it there. There's no openness to the discussion. You say, okay, we'll renegotiate. We're not renegotiating, as you had suggested, of other locations and other uses.
What's the question here?
Why are we not discussing, if we're going to have these long discussions over a considerable period of time, other locations, other uses for the land, and not just be focusing on a yes or no for this stadium, which the owners apparently don't want to talk about anything else, but if they're going to be discussing and open for negotiation, location and the uses of the land should be, in my mind, as you were suggesting, sir, part of the discussion.
I would certainly imagine that the parcel that you want to use is the one that Rhode Island deems is best for Rhode Island. And I think that that's the approach you take.
Hello, Dr. Steinberg. I'm Charlie Baxt, and I'm open-minded on the stadium. I live in Grandstand Section 32 at Fenway Park. Actually, I live a mile from here. I'm a Brown alumnus, and this question really relates to Brown. And that is, I keep hearing that Brown wants the stadium, the football games would be played there and whatnot, and maybe that's a great idea. I'm open-minded about that, too. But I want to know if Brown is interested in doing this, how much are they paying toward the cost of the stadium? And what would happen, to the current Brown Stadium property?
Well, once again, it's easy. I have no idea.
I knew you were going to say
that. It's true. So I don't know.
Just let me say, maybe I've missed something. I haven't seen any real substantial discussion about this. And as people try to get their brains around what you're proposing, that's something people are going to want to know.
Well heard.
If I could just answer that briefly, Charlie, thanks for the question. Brown doesn't have a position on it. Brown doesn't want the stadium. We are trying to get our minds around this as well. We are neutral. We're into the discussion. If we come, once we make a decision, we'll certainly have everybody know about it. But it's very much under conversation at Brown.
And at Brown, the conversation will be open, it'll involve every bit of the Brown community, and it'll go on for some time. So no decisions yet, no position.
And I'd just like to add in that is that if it were to be used as a football state, if this baseball stadium were to be used by Brown for, again, soccer, football, any of these other things, that would very, very much go against the grain of what's gone on in all of stadium economics over the past two decades, where multi-use stadiums have disappeared because baseball and every other rectangular sport simply doesn't share facilities very well. And you know, look, Charles is well-meaning to say, hey, we'll try to use these things for as many things as we can, and there's no doubt that they will try to use them for many things as they want. Unfortunately, baseball just simply does not share very well just because of the nature of the sport. Again, Fenway Park does a very, very, you know, Fenway Park obviously clearly does soccer games. Right. Fenway Park is obviously used for major soccer matches on regular occasions. That being said, it is used despite the fact that it's a terrible place to watch soccer, not because it's such an awesome place to watch soccer.
Yeah, I'll just concur with that. It's if you are doing multiple sports in a different kinds of sports in a baseball stadium, it's compromised. It can work, but it's not ideal.
Terry Devine. So my question, I don't know the economics of baseball, all right? And one question, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about families coming to baseball games. Right, and I do know that the times that I've gone to see the Paw Sox, I've been up there a couple of times. I'm a New Yorker, and I've been to the Staten Island Yankees, and we lived, you know, on the line going to the Brooklyn Cyclones. When we went, we paid next to nothing. They were fundraisers for school. My daughter got to go because she read six library books here. You know, and we happen to know the former owner of the Paw Sox. So the bottom line, though, is that as a family activity, it's very appealing because it's cheap. And the question I have is that if the team is going to pay for the stadium, all right, how are you going to make those numbers work without a heavy public subsidy? Because I can tell you that the Staten Island Yankees and the Brooklyn Cyclones had very heavy subsidies. And so I'm wondering how those numbers are going to work. And if you were to tack on the cost of taking public transportation to a game, I mean, those tickets, those train tickets are not cheap. So if you were to add that on, you know, and then, you know, and the food is at these AAA places, it's not like the Fenway. I mean, they basically give the food away as well. So Can you address that, like how you make these numbers? I don't know the purpose of a AAA team, but my perception has always been it's a training ground. And, you know, it's not the place where the team makes money. So if you could address the question of how do you make those numbers work and make it affordable for families?
Yeah. I don't know if I know all the answers to your questions, but I'll tell you this. Start at the end of the story. It has to be, it's only successful if it works for moms and dads and kids. It has to work for families. That's your bread and butter. This is not one where you're going to lose that as your fundamental core. That's why the ticket prices have to remain affordable. That's why the food has to be. That's why you want it to be what we were talking about before. It's something that binds people from all over New England. I won't pretend that I'm an economist. I'm the probably the opposite of that. But you've got to design it in a way that works for you, for the way you just described. That's how it works. And that's what we believe can be done. And that's why if there are private benefits, there are public benefits, there are ways to make sure that you've got a ballpark. And there are several functions for a minor league club, for a AAA club. It is a training ground for the Boston Red Sox, and it's also a business that makes ends meet, and it does do that, and it has done that. So you want those fundamentals, but the families are the key to not only survival but to it flourishing. That's who you're building it for.
Are you intending to have corporate suites, or is that part of the plan?
You would have to tell me the market. You would have to tell me whether you want to supplement the bread and butter seats with suites that corporations will pay for. That depends on the market. I think when Cleveland built their ballpark, they had, I think, 120 corporate suites, three rows of 40. Well, if that was your market and that's what allowed you to keep the seats very affordable, hey, knock yourself out. When we built Camden Yards, I believe our assessment of the market was about 40 of those. But to the degree that there is a market for those who want to have those suites, and if that revenue allows you to have something like the Mondor plan where you have $8 tickets, great, but you better know your market.
My name's David Kolsky. I run the Neighborhood Discussion Group for Wayland Square. But my question is actually about comparing Pawtucket and Providence. So I guess it's directed to Dr. Matheson and Mr. Robbins. In my impression is that Pawtucket is on the brink of breaking out from a post-industrial slump. It has arts and restaurants and a lot of vitality. And my feeling is, and so that's why I want you, that the benefit to Providence, which already has lots of activity going on from moving the stadium, compared to leaving the stadium in Pawtucket, where it might make the difference, you know, between Pawtucket being able to break out of a slump when it has international arts festivals and it has a lot of other activity, that might hurt Pawtucket much more than it would benefit Providence.
Okay, so that's a possibility. The one thing certainly you want to do as an economist is if you're going to count the benefits that accrue to building a new stadium in Providence, you better also count the sort of costs that are going to be associated with Pawtucket losing that piece. You know, if you're talking about Providence taxpayer money going into a stadium, that's one thing. But if you're talking about Rhode Island state taxpayer money going into something, you better be very concerned about the fact that really you are moving activity 5 miles down the road, and you better be considering the cost to Pawtucket if you're going to be considering the benefits to Providence.
Hi, my name is Joseph Palino, and I'm a Providence resident and an investor and property owner in the city. When this was first announced, I kind of scratched my head and said, gee, does this really make sense? Why don't they put it where the scrap metal yard is on Allen's Avenue and try to revitalize that area instead of seeing what we see every day? And then I drove down to the location. And then I parked the car and I just looked around. I saw the skyline of the city, everything that's been promoted. I said, wow, I get it. Because I started thinking that when the Providence Civic Center was first built back in the early 70s, it was done really for the Rhode Island Reds and now for the Boston Bruins and PC basketball and other great events that have been there. When Sinatra was there, Elvis was there, Springsteen, whatever. And it does add a lot to Providence. And when we, years ago, planned the convention center, it was specifically to try to put it in that area to complement the Civic Center. And we've seen so much good things happen with the Rivers and Capitol Center and other things. It's nice to see now somebody's paying attention to the other part of the city. And to Brown's credit, with them going into the jewelry district, they took an area that nobody wanted to invest in, and they're making that very valuable. So having that stadium there, I get it. What I don't get, yes, I'm not trying to do a commercial, Peter. What I don't get is how they came out with the financial thing, because that's what I think everybody is upset about, rightfully so. And I say to myself, gee, why don't they have the users pay for this? Example, when the Civic Center had the name of Dunkin' Donuts, the city gets $1 million a year. Why can't one of the banks or somebody pay $1 million a year and let that go towards it? Why can't they add $1 or $2 to the ticket and again, let the users pay for it? I don't see it as all that complicated. And it's not only has it been complicated, but it's become extremely divisive in the community, which it doesn't have to. This today, I applaud all of you, because having this discussion on both sides is really helpful. But this is a no-brainer. It's a beautiful stadium. I personally like the location. Maybe others don't. But the financing of it could be done by a lot of reasonable people. But just to say we want everything and ask for everything, that's not going to go. But to sit down and go over it and let the users pay for it, I think it works. And I think it would be wonderful for not only Providence, but for the state.
It should be pointed out that if you make the users pay entirely for this, the approximate numbers is that you need to fill that stadium every single game of the year, completely fill it, and you have to have a user pay tax of roughly $8 or $9 a ticket. And there's where you've got the real problem, because you're talking about essentially doubling the price of the tickets, even if you throw in some naming rights and other things.
Well, I have to cut in for a moment, and you're the expert, I'm not. But if the Pawtucket Red Sox got 600,000 people or 580,000 last year, and figure 600,000, maybe if they do some other games, maybe you get 700,000 people a year. $2 is $1.4 million. I think the owners have been looking for $5 million a year subsidy. If you get $1 million a year for naming rights, you're getting pretty close to taking care of that gap. So I think you kind of scare people when you say $9. I don't think you have to say that. I think if everybody wants everything to be affordable, make it affordable. Somebody's going to have a beer, maybe there's going to be an extra tax on the beer for 25 cents or 50 cents. But I believe that with what you have, see how close you can get to fill in the gap, and then see where we are after that.
Catherine Orloff from Providence, and kind of along the same lines that Mayor Perlino was, but this is directed to Dr. Steinberg. Many times this evening you've spoken of the fact that the stadium owned by the Pawtucket Red Sox is a private benefit, but it also has public benefits. And you've said that maybe four or five times. And I wanted to question the logic a little bit of it, because it seems to me that any time there's a private improvement in any area, and especially in a city, there's also a public benefit. So if I paint my house and re-landscape my yard, there's a private benefit to me, but there's also a public benefit on my street. My neighbors like to look at it better, the street looks better, et cetera. And so, but I think the undistributed middle, as they say in logic, in your argument is that because there's a public benefit to the private Paw Sox thing, therefore there's a public subsidy merited and owed. But I don't expect a public subsidy to fix up my house, and every small business that repairs or improves or expands, there's also a public benefit as well as their private benefit, but they do that all on their own. They pay for it themselves. So my question is, how do you logically jump to the idea that there's a public subsidy needed and deserved because there's this public benefit, which I say is with every private improvement?
Well, I think that you would wind up looking at what all of the public benefits are, and you look at what the private benefits are, and then you look at what the corresponding investments are that are worthwhile to you. If it's not worthwhile, then you don't do it. If it is worthwhile, then you do it. When Victor was talking about U.S. Cellular, yes, that was a new ballpark, but it didn't spawn redevelopment. It did not create the critical mass that transformed or changed that neighborhood. It did not even showcase Chicago when you have your telecast and you like for a telecast to be a Chamber of Commerce commercial for your city. So there are varying degrees of benefits. And I think when you're talking about something that's multi-purpose, and by the way, Lucchino was the one who said baseball only when we built Camden Yards, so much so that he made sure that it was insufficient a distance from home plate out to center field for a football field to fit. But there is not this wisdom of dogma where we say one size fits all, where we say that which do for this, do for this. In Providence, in Rhode Island, it's a different set of circumstances. It's a different experience that people have had. And so what you want to do is say, what makes it work here? Well, if designing it with traditional baseball values, but with a cleverness and an ingenuity that makes it work well for football too, or for lacrosse, or for a James Taylor concert, well, then you're deriving a lot of benefits that go beyond baseball, because the point, and we will say this a lot, is that it's more than a ballpark. We believe that.
I'll just very quickly say, if the baseball stadium has a disproportionate public component versus private component, there is an economic justification for subsidy. My personal opinion is that the public component of baseball is not significantly larger than the public component of lots of businesses out there, and we would never think about building a movie theater for a movie theater chain, and we wouldn't think about building restaurants for restaurateurs, and we seem to kind of lose our head a little bit when it comes to America's pastime.